all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
And we're going to talk this hour about some real support for rural Wisconsin. Hans Breitenmoser will join us from up in Lincoln County in the Merrill area, and we will go over several rural economic development projects that have been announced for Wisconsin through the Biden administration, the Evers administration. Senator Tammy Baldwin talks up some of the new things that are in the brand new federal budget for rural Wisconsin as well. So we'll talk about that. We'll hear from Courier Newsroom national correspondent Alan Piper about ways that some Republicans are still trying to put a national abortion ban in place and thinking they have found a way to do it without having to pass any new laws or any other kind of legislation. So we'll talk more about that coming up. Chad Holmes will join us, and so does Brittany Merlot, meteorologist for Civic Media, right after we tell you that Rob over in Tigerton says good morning. It's clear in 32. A year ago in the Tigerton area, we had 9 inches of snow. What a difference a year makes. We need some moisture. The rivers are really low. And he says, P.S., I got a wood tick on my leg after my walk in the woods. So, yeah, between the wood ticks and, the skunks are a little bit more potent out there these days. Spring is it's pretty much all but here, Brittany, and that includes the wind and the warmth and a risk of fire danger as well. Good morning.
Yes, it sure does. Good morning, everyone. Another warm day for us. But of course, like you mentioned, bringing that fire risk right back to the entire state today. Very high. Winds are going to be gusting up to 25 to 30 miles per hour, and they already are in the southern half of the state. So a windy morning that'll work its way into the northern half as well as we go through this afternoon and into the evening. So a breezy day today, warming us up to temperatures once again, all of us hitting into the mid-60s. And we could even have some 70s. We're looking into Milwaukee, Madison, Richland Center, even into Baraboo and the Dells. You'll probably hit 70 degrees into La Crosse too. So an extremely warm day after some areas broke records yesterday. So we're putting that on repeat. However, the difference is I think there's going to be a few more clouds building in throughout the afternoon, and then they'll kind of clear out there tonight because a minor cold front is sweeping through. It's not really going to drop our temperatures, obviously, but it is going to give us a little bit of clouds as we go through the day today, and temperatures still hold mild tomorrow before we get hit with some rain on Thursday.
Yeah, we have quite a range of temperatures here, ranging from Hayward, being at 36 and Wausau at 39. But here in Chippewa Falls, it's 51. The normal high on this day is 39. And yet we're probably going to tie the record of 67 degrees here. You've got, Green Bay at 44, La Crosse 53 already, Rapids at 51, Oshkosh 47, Madison 51, Waukesha 48. So you're saying that the range in temperatures that we have today, is it like more wind driven versus clouds or any system that's moving in?
Correct. Definitely more wind driven out there right now. Nobody really has clouds outside. So the only thing that's going on is the winds are pushing those temperatures so warm into central and southern Wisconsin right now. But we'll all get that soon. It'll be a nice spring day.
So it seems like so. We need to watch out for wind, skunks, wood ticks, caramel delight cookies. Those are all the major problems with our weather right now.
Such a plague out there.
It's a plague. Yeah. It's a pox upon your house, I tell you.
Greg, did we determine, since you really don't, apparently these caramel delights are like his kryptonite here. He does not like the coconut in there.
Disgusting.
So, Greg, did we ever get a favorite from you? Would it be this box of Thin Mints?
So right you here? Take a Thin Mint, throw it in the freezer, bring it out, put a little peanut butter on top of that. Perfect little snack. But yes.
You'd put peanut butter on a Thin Mint, on a frozen Thin Mint.
Yeah, do something about it.
And, yeah, I'm going to have another caramel delight because that's coconut and chocolate are what you put on a cookie.
And I thought you caramel. Loved America. Also, I love the peanut butter patty, and the lemonades are really tasty.
Brittany, favorite Girl Scout cookie?
Oh, definitely Thin Mint or, the caramel delight. One of the two.
All right, goodbye.
See?
Oh. I got to go with Thin Mint. It's always been Thin Mint, tried and true. I was a Girl Scout back in the day. I always said Thin Mint, so I'm going to stick with Thin Mint.
All right. There you go.
What about you? Samoas?
Craig says you're allowed. Yep, the Samoas or Caramel Delights. They're different names depending on which bakery is making them. But, oh, yeah, that package is not going to stay open for much longer.
Now I'm going to have cookies breakfast. For breakfast. Yeah, right?
Yeah, why not? We're grown adults now. We can do that. My dentist is saying, yes, go ahead. Have the Caramel Delights for breakfast. All right, Brittany, thank you. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Thank you.
All right. It is 7:11 now, and the Wisconsin legislature will be meeting today, the state Senate specifically. The state assembly has already gaveled out for the year, and I would add parenthetically, the legislature is getting paid a full-time salary. They have full-time status. They have full-time staff, and yet they're deciding on this March 12th, we're good. We're done actually doing anything in the way of lawmaking, said the lawmakers. The Senate will work on something like 65 to 70 the different bills today. We will be talking in the next several days about what ultimately got done and what ultimately did not get done during this session, another session where it seemed Republican leadership was much more fixated, some would say obsessed, with thwarting Governor Tony Evers than in actually passing policy that made a difference in the lives of Wisconsinites. And in fact, for years now, Republican budget austerity has been especially harmful to the University of Wisconsin system, to the point where yesterday came the news that UW-Milwaukee is going to close its campus in Waukesha at the end of the spring semester next year, eliminating an educational option that's been around since 1966, according to reporting from Kelly Meyerhofer of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And of course, it raises more concerns about the viability of the remaining branch campuses. There are, four of the 13 branch campuses that have already closed or are moving to an online model at the end of the school year. Now, there is a valid argument to be had about what should happen with these two-year centers. Anybody who listens to Todd Alba on afternoons here on the Civic Media Radio Network knows his very strong feelings about ways that you can repurpose these to, again, have a community education footprint in all of these 13 different communities. That is one argument. At the other extreme is the argument that these 13 extra campuses were only created because of the baby boom, that the other 13 four-year campuses were about as full as could be back in the day, and so they started creating more of these campuses and turned them into two-year centers. And somewhere in the midst of all of that, every community and the UW system is going to have to make some decisions about, what are these things? Are they viable options for education? Do they serve some other kind of purpose? How do they do so in a way that, is an efficient use of tax dollars? UW-Milwaukee's chancellor, Mark Moen, said in the Journal Sentinel article, as students' demands change, universities must change. He said there simply weren't enough students to sustain a two-year campus in Waukesha, especially true since Waukesha County Technical College has a campus about 3 miles away, and it too offers associate degrees now. So between the Republican-led legislature consistently underfunding what could have kept some of these campuses viable, married with demographics. Neither one of these things did it on its own, but it's leading to, basically, it is a debate that could have been handled years earlier, perhaps, but now budget realities are forcing the conversation to move forward and forcing state and local officials to say, what is it that we want to do with these two-year centers? And, one by one, some of them seem to be choosing the route of closing down. But back to the forcing of a recall election for Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, supporters of former President Donald Trump did indeed submit petitions yesterday seeking to force that recall election. They were angered when he refused to impeach Megan Wolf, the head of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, who again has a national reputation for fairness, professionalism, independence, all of the things that Trump supporters don't want to see in an elections office when they would much rather be able to dictate who won an election. Now, the Wisconsin Elections Commission will be looking at the estimated 10,000 signatures to see if there are enough that would actually force a recall election. Megan Wolf has been a target of those who falsely believed that Trump won Wisconsin in 2020. Voss repeatedly tried to placate this group by putting former State Supreme Court Justice William Gableman in charge of an expensive and botched investigation, but later said he was not in favor of impeaching Wolf because he said there wasn't enough support among fellow Republican legislators to do so. Small wonder. She's good at her job. She's getting it done. But again, some people who want to continue to carry the big lie on behalf of Donald Trump look like they're now going to be forcing a potential recall election, even if, you know, there is already an election coming up later this year with new maps. For folks who are saying that this is all, you know, some kind of a Democratic front, I'm not going to tell you that there are no Democrats or Democratic leading people involved in this, but don't try to smokescreen this. These are Trump supporters, and this is where the party has gone. This is a state party that, through its county parties, has sometimes essentially laundered funds so that the Trump campaign could get away with circumventing spending limits in the last effort to primary Robin Voss and have him defeated. This is a party that is torn apart between itself. And as we mentioned in the last hour, that split has already been exacerbated by the Trump team now effectively taking over the Republican National Committee, the National Republican Party, and yesterday announced dozens and dozens of layoffs that will affect the National Republican office as well as community offices where Republicans were trying to do voter outreach. They're really counting on just a cult of personality around Donald Trump to win just enough votes in Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and elsewhere to carry Trump to a second term. We'll hear from Courier Newsroom's Alan Piper coming up next about Republican efforts to put forward a national abortion ban here on Up North News Radio, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Way down here, you need a reason to move.
James Taylor turns 76 years old today. For folks, and there are plenty of folks still who say, is this all overblown? Are you overhyping the dangers of a potential second Trump presidency? I would point to his actions and words this week in hosting the Hungarian strongman, Viktor Orban, who has taken a sledgehammer to democracy in his European country and has chased away educators, has chased away media, has, you know, again, tried to, you know, have political opponents jailed, has said that democracy doesn't work. Orban is Vladimir Putin's primary ally for Western Europe, and Donald Trump is admiring Orban for what he has done. The same things that he has said about other strongmen and dictators all around the world. So when he gives you these indications saying that he wants to be a dictator, and he says only on day one, strike the word only. Nobody who's a dictator on day one gives it all up on day two. And there's already a plan for what else would come up in a second Trump term, written by a bunch of right-wing groups and consultants. It's called Project 2025. And in this report, Courier Newsroom national correspondent Alan Piper talks specifically about how Project 2025 has ideas in there to replace experts in government with partisan lackeys in order to further gut women's health care rights.
Trump's not just bragging about overturning Roe versus Wade.
For 54 years, they were trying to get
Roe v. Wade terminated, and I did it.
He's also preparing to install an army of MAGA loyalists to help him ban abortion nationwide. Three key facts about how Project 2025, the 800-plus page presidential plan penned by Trump's allies, would strip Americans of reproductive freedom. Number one, Trump could make abortion inaccessible without passing any new laws. The centerpiece of Project 2025 is replacing the non-political staff of government agencies with MAGA henchmen. That includes the FDA. On page 458, former Trump staffer Roger Severino calls for a MAGA FDA to reject medical science and reverse its approval of all abortion medication, effectively banning it nationwide. But the plan goes much further. Striking down Roe v. Wade might have set reproductive freedom back to 1973, but Project 2025 would take it back to 1873. On page 562, Trump Department of Justice official Jean Hamilton declares that a MAGA DOJ would enforce the Comstock Act of 1873, which bans the mailing of, quote, anything designed, adapted, or intended for producing abortion, and is still technically on the books. This could be used to block not just the shipment of abortion pills, but any medical instruments used in abortions. Project 2025 also seeks to end insurance coverage for abortion. On page 585, former Trump official Jonathan Berry writes about working to, quote, keep anti-life benefits out of benefit plans offered by employers. On page 472, Severino calls to block Medicaid funds to states that require insurers to cover abortion. And on page 642, former Trump VA official Brooks D. Tucker plans to block the VA from offering abortions to veterans. Number two. Project 2025 calls for abortion surveillance. On page 455, Severino seeks to ramp up, quote, the CDC's abortion surveillance, writing, because liberal states have now become sanctuaries for abortion tourism, HHS should use every available tool to ensure that every state reports exactly how many abortions take place within its borders, including the mother's state of residence. This abortion registry could put anyone who travels for an abortion from a state where it's banned at risk of prosecution when they get home. Number three, there's nothing pro-life about the anti-abortion plans in Project 2025. The plan threatens to block emergency rooms from performing abortions even in life-threatening situations. Currently, there's a law that requires any hospital that accepts Medicare, which is basically all of them, to perform abortions when the life of the parent depends on it. Republicans are fighting that before the Supreme Court. But even if they fail, page 473 calls on a MAGA-controlled HHS and DOJ to invert the federal interpretation of that law so that any hospital that performs an emergency abortion could be at risk of losing federal funds. And going to a clinic could get a lot more dangerous. Page 558 calls for the DOJ to reverse course on prosecuting extremists who block clinic entrances and threaten patients and doctors with violence. And of course, Project 2025 seeks to slash programs that would help the children it would force Americans to give birth to, like school lunch programs, see page 302, food stamps, see page 299, and education programs like Head Start, see page 482. You can read more for yourself at their website, project2025.org. I'm Alan Piper at apiper13. This is my third video about Project 2025 and how it seeks to transform every aspect of American life. Follow Courier Newsroom to see the others.
So there's the audio from Courier Newsroom national correspondent Alan Piper. And as he mentions there, he's put together a series of videos about Project 2025. And you can look for those on the social media feeds for Up North News, and especially the Up North News Facebook page, where you'll find all of that reporting from Alan Piper. It helps, again, to remind folks that in the wake of the Alabama Supreme Court basically trying to get rid of IVF by saying that fertilized eggs are children, there was this initial push by what you might consider mainstream Republicans to say, oh, no, we're against abortion, but we're for IVF. You even had Donald Trump saying that he strongly supports the let me get that quote right. He, quote, strongly supports the availability of IVF, and he called on lawmakers in Alabama and elsewhere to preserve access to the treatment. And Republicans, in many instances, have been, again, tripping over themselves to say, well, we're good with IVF, especially when you consider how many of their voters have used in vitro fertilization to start a family. But now comes the backlash to the backlash, where people who are against all abortion rights are accusing such Republicans, I assume Donald Trump among them, of being insufficiently pro-life when it comes to that topic. Let's see, from Politico here, you have the anti-abortion movement is turning on Republican lawmakers who support bills to protect IVF, accusing them of sanctioning murder. As many politicians raced in recent weeks to get to the right side of public opinion on IVF, some of the country's biggest and most influential anti-abortion groups are pushing back. And that's going to have an impact. You're going to see Republicans flip-flop repeatedly on this. They're going to try to thread the needle. They're going to try to have it both ways to say that they are against abortion. They favor a national abortion ban, but you know they won't say so until the bill is actually in front of them. They say they support IVF, but as soon as an embryonic personhood bill is right before them, they may vote on that and then say, well, I was for IVF, but this was the bill that was here, and so we just decided to go along with it. That is a very real possibility in a second Trump term if Republicans control the House and the Senate the way that they currently dominate the U.S. Supreme Court. Back with Hans Breitenmoser in just a bit, wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Tuesday morning when you're here, you're up north, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Mama don't understand it. She wants to know where I've been. I'd have to be some kind of natural born fool to want to pass that way again. But you know I could feel it. On a country road.
Hans Breitenmoser will be with us in just a bit. First, a reminder, you can subscribe to our newsletter. Head to upnorthnewswi.com. We got a comment on Facebook from Jennifer, who asks, where's the link to the Alan Piper segment on Project 2025? Good question, Jennifer. Because there is so much that we put on our social media feeds, it might involve a lot of scrolling to get to it. So as much as I want you on the Up North News Facebook page, I'm going to tell you that the fastest way to get to the videos that get put together by folks like Alan Piper is actually to go to couriernewsroom.com. If you go to our parent company, couriernewsroom.com, you can scroll down rather quickly to a section on videos. And right there will be just a series of videos that our national team puts together about issues, including all of the things that are in Project 2025. So we'll get a link in under the podcast description as well to this show, which you can find over at civicmedia.us. All right, Hans joins us now from the Lincoln County area up around Merrill. And Hans, how are you doing today?
I'm well, Pat. How are you?
I am good, thank you. I'm looking out the window here. And again, I have tried to couch this to say, I understand it's dry out there. I understand, blah, 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 blah. But we've been through so many rough winters. And I'm like, I can't really complain about the lack of a winter, but I'm also not a farmer who needs, the soil moisture to come up a bit. And I see that there's, again, red flag warnings in areas, for a fire risk. So I don't know. I'm not asking you to be alarmist, but just kind of realistic. What's, from what you can see and hear and tell around Wisconsin, how are things looking between now and, when planting season would begin?
Well, of course, I don't have a crystal ball, and I think the meteorologists get kind of a bad rap because as the weather gets crazier, they're still expected to predict what it's going to do next, and it changes every 5 seconds, it seems like. But it has been an abnormal winter, that is for sure. And I agree, it's sort of hard not to enjoy it because, you know, it's pleasant outside. But yes, the lack of moisture is worrisome, to be sure.
Yeah. And look, you know, a year ago, we talked about drought. Real drought concerns for like the first 2/3 to 3/4 of the growing season. And, you know, then enough came in late. I mean, just barely. And that certainly could be the case again. But, you know, we want to get a feel for where things are right now as we head into that planting season. But now let's turn to some of the other things that make rural Wisconsin work. And it's so much more than the farms and the producers, although that's a big part of it. But there's so much more in terms of housing and infrastructure and, you know, clean water and all of that. And I sometimes feel like we focus so much on some of the big picture, like, you know, Pentagon spending and federal government shutdowns and things like that. But you and I both know for government to work, any kind of government, for government to work, it's got to be focused on a whole lot of the small things, including at the local level. Right? When it comes to, you know, how does government work best?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And having been involved in local government for 10 years, I was able to see that up close and personal. We have to have local governments have to have good relationships with the state and federal government. We also need federal government to understand what local government needs and when we need it and so forth. So there has to be good communication there, certainly, but there has to be a federal government that it understands it, that gets it. And I think that the Biden administration, to their credit, is one of those federal governments that does sort of understand what's happening at the local level and where money needs to go and so forth. So it's been encouraging to see what the USDA is up to and so forth.
Yeah, and we're going to get into some of the specifics on that. Just to make the one final, you know, political point on this is that when you have a certain political faction that all they can talk about is budget cuts, all they can talk about is, you know, austerity measures, limiting waste, fraud, and abuse, you know, which is just a way to cover up, you know, the cuts that they want to make. They've boxed themselves in. They can't actually crow about and take advantage of, you know, the spending that they did get for their hometowns. There was such a hullabaloo, hit the bell, about, you know, earmarks back in the day, about budget earmarks. And I'm here to tell you yet again, you want budget earmarks, but what you want is transparency. The earmark thing was getting abused when members of Congress or the legislature wouldn't put their name on the things that they wanted inserted into bills because maybe they were favors to others. But if you're bringing home the bacon back home, you should be talking that up, Hans, right? You should let people know, hey, I brought the money for X, Y, and Z, rather than just saying, well, a bunch of bureaucrats decided who was going to get the money.
Yeah. Well, again, it's politics. But, you know, I mean, the other interesting thing, I guess I'm going to go sideways here a little bit, is that both conservatives and progressives, conservatives and progressives have had this sort of philosophical debate for years. Progressives, of course, believe that the government can do something and should do something in terms of, economic success and moving the needle on the economy and getting involved in the economy. And Republicans historically have said, well, the government has no business in that world. But the reality is, it's both parties have an inclination to do something. It's just that I feel like progressives understand that, you know, they're kind of like farmers in that they understand that the money that gets pumped in is seed, and you need to get that seed close to the ground, or preferably in the ground, which is to say, get it down to the local level so that local projects and local governments can take advantage of it, rather than take taxpayer dollars and stick it into silly things like Foxconn and great big things that are in the analogy, throwing those seeds, you know, out the window and expecting them to stick someplace. So it's just a different philosophy. But these dollars that are tax dollars, they're our tax dollars, are getting pumped in close to the ground in projects that not only will those initial dollars do a great deal of good in the short term and in the long term, but they're also going to grow more rapidly. They're going to proliferate to beat heck at the, you know, at this level versus this trickle down nonsense.
Yeah, and let's talk about a few of them specifically. And again, they come from different sources, but one of them you talked about was the USDA, which has a rural development office. Former State Senator Julie Lassa is the state director for the USDA's rural development office, and announced in the past month that some $33 million in grants and loans, I'd hasten to add, they're not all grants, but in grants and loans, went to various projects as part of President Biden's Investing in America agenda. And they include, as part of the USDA Rural Partners Network, they include that Northwood Technical College is getting about $1 million in a distance learning and telemedicine grant to equip five different hub sites for distance learning. Again, a key part for folks that, you know, maybe working on farms or have other jobs and can't commute nearly as far to you know, to further their education. This kind of, you know, telemedicine and distance learning is, you know, extremely important. So part of it is technology. Some of it is, you know, like, you know, energy related. There's a business in Ettrick that's going to get a $100,000 grant to purchase and install a solar electric array. Hans, I don't know if they're, and then here's one for the Adams County Fire District is getting $34,000 as a grant to install a backup generator for the Adams County Fire District. It's these little things, they don't get a lot of attention, but that's what makes a difference across rural Wisconsin.
Absolutely. It really does make a difference for both small businesses and for local governments. And again, I've worn both of those hats. I have a small business. I have a farm. We've got a farm with solar panels, and I can tell you that it's a good long-term investment. But to be able to help along help small businesses to get there is huge, because again, now you know, looking at that solar panel example, there are dollars that went into the community to install that system, to maintain that system, and so forth. Those dollars otherwise may have just gone out to bigger and bigger companies that provide our electricity and down the road. So they multiply. And when it comes to the clean energy part of it, I mean, we all know that we need to move in that direction as quickly as possible for its own sake. But those dollars can be made in rural areas. And they're another way that rural areas can survive and thrive, because this is, you know, renewable energy is something that's going to happen out in the countryside.
Yeah, and I think we're going to talk more with Melissa Baldoff in this week's climate change segment as well about this. But Governor Evers recently announced that Wisconsin's been selected by the U.S. Department of Energy for rural clean energy demonstrations, ways, again, to help modernize the way that we generate electricity, address high electricity costs in rural areas, bolster some economic opportunity in rural areas. These clean energy jobs, they're being created right now, and they're being created in rural areas, more in other states than in Wisconsin, according to the latest figures that I've seen. But that just tells me that there is still plenty of room for Wisconsin to grow its clean energy job sector.
Absolutely. And again, putting my, you know, former local government hat on, people need to realize that who they elect at the local level and at the state level really, really matters. And it matters, you know, because of potholes and so forth. But when you start talking about electing mayors, city council members, county board supervisors, those elections matter for this reason as well, because the federal government is not going to come and dump a great big pile of money on your head without you raising your hand and making a good case for it. But if you've got county board officials or city council officials who are just so anti-government and anti the federal, you know, and this and are so, for ideological reasons, willing to, you know, turn their backs on tax dollars that we've spent in your local areas, you're not going to get that kind of movement at the local level. And I don't think a lot of people understand that. You have to have a partnership. You have to have local government that is out there seeking those funds and seeing where they can apply it in your community. And if you don't have those people running, you need to run yourself. And if you do have those people running, you need to make sure that you support them.
Oh, absolutely. I want to say about it being a partnership, because there are states that are sending back federal money that would help feed children. There are school districts who are, you know, trying to cut their school lunch program because, you know, again, it's an anti-government philosophy. And then, of course, the big one in Wisconsin is the billions of dollars that has been, you know, expended unnecessarily because Republicans running the legislature for 10 years now would not expand Medicaid, would not accept billions in Medicaid funding to provide affordable health care to their folks. Without that kind of partnership, state, local, and federal, yeah, again, these funds will simply go to other communities that are more invested in taking care of their people.
That's right, Pat. That's what people need to understand. It's not like those funds won't get used. They'll just get used in some other community besides yours because the leadership in that community had the good sense to take advantage of those dollars. And again, when you're talking rural counties, we're in need of those dollars. We can use them. We can put them to good use. And, you know, we started the segment talking about the weather. As the weather gets crazier, and I'm sure you've seen this in your community, you go down some of these township roads and you see culverts that are getting washed out because you get the 3 inches of rain all at one time and so forth. You've got old infrastructure that is now being stressed more than ever with crazy weather events. Those costs are going to be borne by local governments. We're going to have to figure out how to get over those humps and make ourselves more climate resistant. And that's not a small task. It takes dollars. So anytime we can get some kind of partnership with federal dollars or state dollars, we're fools not to take advantage of it. And I'm probably beating this to death, but I do feel like spring elections are coming up here. And it's really, really important for people to get out and understand who their county board supervisors are and make sure that these folks just didn't go there because, you know, they had some ideological bent about, you know, the Second Amendment or something like that. Get people involved who actually understand what's going on mm-hmm. and are willing to have an open mind and do the right thing.
And we didn't even get into everything that Tammy Baldwin had put in the new federal spending bill that's going to help out rural Wisconsin. We'll cover that again in the future. Hans Breitenmoser, thanks so much. Have a great day.
Yeah, you too. Thank you.
All right. Chad Holmes coming up next on Up North News Radio. If you are in the Wausau area and listening to Bull Falls Radio, you're going to hear that tune again in just about 15 minutes as Chad Holmes gets set to take his show to the airwaves in the Wausau area. And he joins us now to help us talk about some of the issues that he's working on there. Chad, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Hey, I'm going to start with you because you obviously you're not just talking about local elections in a couple of weeks here, but of course we're looking ahead to November and talking about people who are getting things done. And while we've had a lot of fun, you know, with Eric Hovde's not so great launch of his Senate campaign, you've got Tammy Baldwin, who's again explaining the ways that she's getting things done in the latest federal spending bill. It includes things like, you know, $1.4 million to help the city of River Falls renovate its fire station. You've got, is it Rothschild is about to get money for fighting PFAS contamination in the water. You have got, yeah, there it is, $3.3 million there. You've got the Lac du Flambeau tribe getting support for a tribal fish hatchery. A lot of things here about affordable housing and about senior housing, if you want to keep our seniors in rural Wisconsin. So for all the talk about commercials and rhetoric, I mean, actions truly should speak louder than words, even in a campaign season.
Absolutely, 100%. And that's the thing that I find worrisome right now. I mean, even when you just talk about some of the basic issues that you talked about earlier, when you were talking about, you know, Trump talking about Orban. And I'm thinking, how many people actually know who Orban is? How many people know what Tammy Baldwin does on a daily basis? How many people know what Ron Johnson just said? I saw a story yesterday that he was on one of these right-wing television networks, Real America's Voice. So of course, that's where Ron hangs out a lot. Said that inside the bubble, Johnson said, Republicans say we need to get a result. We need to effectively govern. To me, that's almost code words for we got to do Democrat light. I think we'd be far better off if we never passed another piece of legislation. Johnson admits that effective governing is a Democratic issue. And that's what Tammy Baldwin does. The idea that Johnson thinks we should never do anything shows it's a real basic difference between the two senators we have. And I just hope that when we talk about it and others put out the information and the Baldwin camp puts out the information, people realize that what she's doing is not political. It's doing the job. And when someone like Johnson says, when people say, well, we should effectively govern, that he automatically goes to a default that says, that's Democrat talk. I mean, it makes you shake your head. But
it sure does.
I agree 100% that Tammy Baldwin has been now, for two full terms now, basically, been a meat and potatoes legislator, which is, again, what all these legislators should strive for that so few do.
Just do the work. Just do the work. That's all we're looking for. So when you hear comments like from Ron Johnson, and when you think of a legislature that's going home for the next nine months, you know, getting paid rather than actually do their job, it's really not a stretch to say that folks like Ron Johnson, who aren't just hostile to democracy, and his record clearly indicates a hostility to democracy, but you really are talking pro-aristocracy. That the benefits in our community should really come from the benevolence of the very wealthy, who will fund, you know, private academies and you know, create businesses. They're the job creators. And again, it's that kind of an attitude that, you know, we tried to avoid when we created this country, you know, almost 250 years ago.
The idea that they know better, that they know what they're doing, and that if they decide that this is an area to invest in, they know better. But the thing about, you know, the history of the country is, we, unfortunately, another area I don't think people realize. I mean, if you again go back to the late 19th century, the Gilded Age, and people like Johnson, people like Trump, people that I think are leading the mega movement. I would think that if they put a chapter in their Project 2025 on that those truly are the good old days. And those are not the good old days. If you go back to that history, that's where they want to go. They want, you're exactly right. They want everything to be optional. That the benevolence truly is that they know what they're doing. Going back to a full circle. Donald Trump is not intelligent enough to keep his mouth shut about his true beliefs. When he brings up guys like Orban all the time, he is constantly saying exactly what he is and what he wants to do. Will people listen to it? And I worry about that.
Our friend Tony Zimmerman says on a comment on YouTube, they're expected to do the job they were hired for. Seems like that's on us for unrealistic expectations.
By the way, real quick about that idea, the same people that constantly talk about getting people off their couches are probably sitting on their couches most of the time for the next 8-9 months.
That's certainly the case with
the hypocrisy is at times incredible.
Let's look at what's happening closer to home by you. I was supposed to have Wausau Mayor Katie Rosenberg on last Tuesday, but ended up needing a sick day, so I've not connected with her in a bit. What can you tell us about the mayor's race in Wausau?
Well, she popped on over on Wednesday. I was like, what the heck? Pat put her on the day before I got her on. She's taking away all my thunder. So unfortunately for you, you got under the weather, but the mayor is here. And again, something that I find very impressive about the mayor is, going back to the guy that we were just talking about, Johnson, the mayor faces a lot of tough issues and questions. And she's so open about talking about the water issue, talking about budgetary issues, talking about the unhoused, the issues that are faced in this community. And again, that's something that I respect. I think, again, it's going to be there. This community is a lot like the state of Wisconsin. It's not going to be an overwhelming election. There's we have plenty of members that have different political philosophies in this community. It's going to be a very interesting last 3 weeks. Only 3 weeks away. I know there's going to be a couple of joint appearances coming up with her and alderperson Doug Denny. It's going to be about getting that message out there and making sure that you maximize the folks that you know. It's about the meat and potatoes of running a campaign, because that's you cannot. It. Sit back and just assume folks are going to come out.
Chad Holmes talks about this next on Bull Falls Radio on the Civic Media Radio Network. Thank you, Chad. Have a great day.
Thank you, Pat.
Mr. Bach, thank you as well. Go enjoy some caramel delights, and we'll talk more tomorrow. And a reminder that Up North News is the Wisconsin digital outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy news network, building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. Follow us on social media. Look at our Facebook page and subscribe to listen on demand where you get your favorite podcast. Have a great Tuesday. We'll see you tomorrow morning.